Thank you. This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm joined today by Annette Walker. Annette is the president of City of Hope, Orange County. We're going to talk to Annette today about the City of Hope business and what City of Hope does. For those that aren't familiar, and Annette will talk about this for a moment as well, it's one of the largest providers of oncology care. It's a not-for-profit. It's based originally in California, but it's one of the most respected oncology organizations in the world. And so we're glad to have Annette join us today. Annette, can you take a moment and just introduce yourself, and then we'll get into the bulk of the podcast.
Thank you, Scott. Well, as you said, I was the president of City of Hope Orange County. I'm new to this role and new to the City of Hope organization, but I was very excited to join because City of Hope is a very, very unique organization in Southern California. It's solely focused on the eradication of two diseases. One is cancer and the other is diabetes. City of Hope has a long legacy. It's over 100 years old, and they recently made a decision to extend their services to my community, which is Orange County, California. It's about 60 miles away. For those of you who are not familiar with Orange County, it's about a 45-mile geography with 3.2 million people, the sixth most populous county in the United States. And we are currently, as City of Hope, receiving 3,200 patients who travel from Orange County to City of Hope every year. So as part of answering the call of our patients, we are bringing the capacity, the excellence, the research, the subspecialty, the genetics, the cell manufacturing capabilities, and that all of that and packaging it and bringing it to Orange County, California. And it's my honor to be part of that endeavor.
Tell us a little bit about your business and just each answer, 30, 60, 70 seconds, the couple big trends in the business you're in.
Well, cancer care is an interesting field and, you know, definitely very much a niche, but there's three big observations I've had since I've been here. I started last July. And one is how rapidly the field is changing with regard to research and how research is coming together with capabilities in genetics, and then also what AI is doing in the industry. And you bring those things together, and all of a sudden you've got like nuclear power to really focus those efforts on curing cancer and speed to not only diagnosis, but speed to cure, speed to treatment, the bench to bedside time that I think we can anticipate in the future is going to go dramatically down, as will the effectiveness of our treatment.
There has been, over the last couple decades, tremendous improvements in the survival rates of so many cancers. Will this next round of change, and there's just tremendous improvements in the last 10, 20 years, and we all know the survival rates for so many cancers have gone up so dramatically. You talk about the combination of research with AI capacities and other types of capabilities to have another level of dramatic improvement in cancer care and care, actually care, C-U-R-E. What's your expectation and how rapid we start to see those changes in patients that will come from the combination of research and AI over the last few years and the acceleration of it?
Well, I think we can see nothing but good outcomes and improvements in our future in this area. For instance, one of the most exciting things is the advancements that are being made in immunotherapy. And so think about what immunotherapy, which could be 100% specifically targeted, your own immune system, you know, being armed and being fortified to fight your very own specific cancer, and it working, and you avoiding all the, I want to say, bad effects of some of the current treatments that we have to have right now, like chemotherapy and radiation oncology. They're very necessary, but what if you could go straight to immunotherapy and avoid all those other side effects that come with cancer treatment today? So I think not only on the speed to the cure, but the speed to getting back to your own self is going to really be significantly improved.
And I guess my next question is, like, this dramatic improvement on oncology care happened over the last two decades, and it seemed to go in cycles of plateaus and getting better. And over the course of 20 years, we've seen survival rates improve crazily, but it took a while to see it. And there were a whole number of preventive things that went into that, as well as better at chemotherapy and radiation and so forth. The things like immunotherapy, in 30 to 60 seconds, do I see those changes next year or 5 years from now?
I think they're probably closer to 5 years from now because, you know, I am not a physician, but having seen the data presented, what you see is you see that we're having extremely promising clinical trials. And right now, though, there's not enough clinical trials and the cost of the clinical trials are quite high. So it's still going to take us a bit of time, but I think it's going to pick up really fast once we hit the magic element. And our ability to reduce the cost as we get better at it, it's substantial. We've shown it in everything we've ever done in medicine that when you first do something, it's super expensive. And then over time, it becomes more accessible and easier to duplicate, easier to deploy to broader seeds. So I would say it's more like 5 years than it is, 5 weeks. But it's definitely
what is the
possibility.
As we move into precision medicine, we move into immunotherapy that's really directed precisely at a patient. Three, 5, 6 years till we see really being put to work more fully and comprehensively, but lots of progress being made. Is it going to be prohibitive for patients to access it, or are we going to have a cost curve that goes down as that becomes more mainstream?
I think the cost curve will come down as it becomes more mainstream, but it would still be very expensive in the early stages. But, you think about long-term, the cost that might come out of the system if it works. The current therapies are not inexpensive in and of themselves. So if you look at the total picture and you look at the total cost of care from the effects of some of the existing treatments, over time it's going to even itself out. But it is as with everything new, it's going to be expensive on the front end.
And thank you. You lead City of Hope, Orange County.
Yeah.
In your job, in what you do, what do you have to be better at than anybody else to do your job well?
I have to really understand what our value proposition is as a specialty cancer center. I mean, we come into a community, and I think the best way to come into community and be a good citizen of that community is to try to be an complement to that community. I want to say not a competitive to that community, but a complement in that, very few acute care hospitals, or actually I don't think any acute care hospital could reasonably assemble the research capacity that City Hope has. We have 500 scientists and doctors who do nothing but try to cure cancer. Think of the intellectual capital that they can bring into a community. My job is to make sure that the community gets access to that intellectual capital so that we improve the level of cancer care with the other cancer providers in the community, and we really elevate and advance the care as quickly as possible.
Thank you. And so when you look at the business of oncology care, and it's so complicated because it's really a mission and a calling.
It is.
But from simply a P&L perspective, is it getting harder or easier currently, or the same?
I think in some places harder, in some places easier. Value-based care is something we all need to be striving for as providers. We need to be providing the best value. But there's also a danger that you are inadvertently not bringing resources to a patient that they need because it's not approved by your insurance company or, whatever. So it's always this challenge of advocating for the patient. And us as a research organization are particularly concerned that when we're doing these really innovative trials that could really change how cancer is treated long-term and outcomes, that that access or that potential remain available. And, you know, sometimes under the current conversations, we're very concerned that those kind of studies continue to be funded.
No, 100%. Even though there's value-based care in oncology care is one of these kinds of things that's perfect for everybody that's not in your own family. And then you want to make sure value-based is fine, but you want all the resources you need to do everything you can to try and cure the disease.
Yeah, and, you know, I think cancer is a little bit of a different animal than a lot of other diseases, too. So, for instance, you know, when you have a knee surgery and you want to pick an implant or whatever, you know, a knee injury doesn't usually mutate. Cancer is a different kind of adversary in the sense that it mutates. And if precision medicine allows us to hit it the first time with a better bullet, let's put it that way, that eradicates it, but that bullet's not on your formulary, it could make a really big difference to you. It is, I think, very different than many other medical conditions where a more standardized approach might be appropriate.
Certainly. I mean, you're replacing a knee. It's a pretty obviously, each knee is a little bit different. Everybody's outcome's a little bit different. They're all in a human body, but you've got a pretty contained, finite, this is what we're doing. Whereas the cancer gets into different stages, spreads to all different parts of the body, and if you could better target it, it's a much more, you know, there's not 10 device choices, there's 100 different choices to how to attack it, even though you're trying.
No, but what if only one is good for your cancer and you can't get to it? Because precision medicine is getting us down to that degree to be able to know that this is the drug needed for your cancer.
Yes, and everybody's body metabolizes all these things so differently. And so that's the promise of precision medicine, that you'll really get clarity as to what will be effective for which body type, which person type, which blood type, which everything. So just fascinating. So let me ask you a different set of questions around motivation, advice for women leaders, and so forth and that. How do you've got obviously a big job, an interesting place. How do you keep yourself motivated day to day?
Well, I think the first motivation and the most important one is, you know, if you work in healthcare, are you called to this work? Are you moved by the mission of your organization? And if you're not, you shouldn't be in it. So what motivates me is the patients who I meet them on a regular basis who thank me that City of Hope was here for them. The patients in Orange County who came up to me when I accepted the job and said, thank you for bringing City Hope to Orange County because they care for my father, they care for my mother. That's what really drives me in this mission to bring City of Hope and its capabilities to Orange County. You know, then there's other motivations about, you know, just work that you find exciting or the people you work with. All those things are also important. But ultimately, if you can't align with the mission, it's probably not a good fit.
That's a great answer and a great thought. Best advice for women leaders is women increasingly take CEO roles, become the leaders in everything and all kinds of roles. Your best advice for someone developing a career as a woman, is it any different than your advice for a man? And how do you sort of look at that?
I think there are a couple things that are unique to women. And one of them, I do think it is more challenging for women to balance, to find the balance, although I find that it's getting much better. But my most important advice for women is, you know, choose a company that doesn't make you choose between your family and your job. It's the wrong place because you shouldn't have to make that choice. You could be very successful, and many companies don't ask you to make that choice. So, you know, keep in mind that it's always a delicate balance, but sacrificing one for the other never turns out good. The second is to be brave. You know, if you're waiting for the invitation to the table, you know, you may be waiting a long time. You've got to claim your place at the table, and that could be as simple as exerting your opinion without waiting for someone to say, hey, Annette, what do you think? You know, finding your place in there. And then I think the last one, which is extremely important, is finding a sponsor. someone who is in a position of authority to provide you opportunities, guide you, and advocate for you. I think those three things, or maybe if I could only pick three, those would be the three I would pick.
So be brave, find a sponsor, and you can have both. You can have great family. You can have great profession. If you're at
yes,
a company that doesn't allow that, then it's really not a great company. And that's really the truth today, because if you cut off half your workforce and often your most talented people by not allowing them to do both, you end up you can't build a great company today. You just can't do it. So you really have those three things. Understand you can have both, and you have to be at a company that allows it. Be brave, and ultimately find a sponsor/mentor as you move forward. And some of that is true for men as well as women, but probably more acutely for women, particularly the issue of family and work, at least traditionally, and hitting that right balance. But just great, great advice. Thank you, Annette. One last thought. You've been now at City of Hope for a year or so, fascinating, evolving experience. If this year goes well, what does that look like for you?
I'll get full approval for my vision for Orange County. All the capital will be available, and we'll have our feet in the ground. We'll have our feet on the ground with an actual physical presence in Orange County before the end of the year.
Well, fantastic. And congratulations on what you've accomplished and what you're doing. I mean, it really sounds like you've got a number of things that line up well. You're both very mission-focused and mission-driven. You love actually making sure that patients, oncology patients, are taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
You see great hope for the future of care.
Absolutely.
The mix of precision medicine, AI, and so forth, and the amount of research that's going into it, and you see promise in that, maybe not touching us for several years. And then you've got great advice for leadership, for people trying to build careers. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And I love what you said about that. And when people try and choose one or the other, or force themselves to choose one or the other, that never really works anyways. And I think true. And then that you have to be brave and find help and find mentorship and so forth. So, Annette, just a pleasure visiting with you today. And thank you very, very much.
Oh, I really enjoyed it too. Thank you very much for the opportunity and the time.
Just a pleasure. Thank you.